Microsoft's AI disaster, as well as Google's, is getting worse what seems like by the day. Malware is stealing end-to-end encrypted messages for people all around the world, and updates to chat control and other EU regulations, and a lot more. Welcome to Surveillance Report, where I break down the weekly privacy, security, digital rights news from the last week. I'm Henry from TechLore, and it's an honor to be here. And today, I am very excited to share kind of the worst of AI, the somewhat bad of AI, and the somewhat good of AI. Now, for those of you who aren't following Microsoft's birthday for Windows, which I can't say I was, it has actually turned 40, which is really crazy to think about. That's a long time. And our highlight story begins with The Verge. The Verge talks about how Microsoft is blindly racing towards another Windows 8 situation, how people are really upset about all the AI integrations in Windows 11 that seemingly not many people are asking for. Microsoft has talked about how they want this to just be like an agent AI OS. And this is pretty obvious, at least based on the internet's response to this. So like the Windows chief announced the agentic OS plans on a post, and there was an immediate backlash into hundreds of replies saying it's evolving into a product that's driving people to Mac and Linux. Stop this nonsense, said another. And one reply even asked for a return to the Windows 7 days of a clean UI, clean icon, a unified control panel, no bloat apps, no ads, just a pure performant OS. And I think I've been hearing this a lot from a lot of people, and so this isn't a surprise to people, whether you're on video or on audio. Let's dive into the actual news, which is that there was a Microsoft 365 outage that made files unusable. Microsoft also got blamed by Nvidia today, as the latest patch Tuesday is leading to performance issues in games. So if you were gaming on your Windows computer, you might have noticed this, and Nvidia directly blamed Microsoft for it. And like I just said, this is coming off all of the backlash, with people saying they don't want this crazy AI stuff that doesn't seem to work well inside of their operating system. Now, so far, I've only covered stories that maybe speak to some bugs, some issues, or some annoyances with AI, but this also impacts your privacy and literally all of the security on your operating system. And Microsoft acknowledges this themselves. This isn't even a third party. This is from Ars Technica, and they say, as reported Tuesday, Microsoft introduced Copilot Actions, a new set of experimental agentic features that, when enabled, perform everyday tasks like organizing files, scheduling meetings, or sending emails, and provide an active digital collaborator that can carry out complex tasks for you to enhance efficiency and productivity. There's just a little bit of a caveat to all of these amazing things that are being promised that don't quite work the way they already intend them to. They say to only enable Copilot Actions if you understand the security implications outlined. This is based on known defects inherent in most large language models, including Copilot, as researchers have repeatedly demonstrated. And for those of you not watching the video, Ars Technica has researchers have repeatedly demonstrated as four different links to four different examples of how this has been abused, just to illustrate the point. So here's a disclosure from Microsoft themselves about AI just in general from a post on Tuesday. As these capabilities are introduced, AI models still face functional limitations in terms of how they behave and occasionally may hallucinate and produce unexpected outputs. Additionally, agentic AI applications introduce novel security risks such as cross-prompt injection, XPIA, where malicious content embedded in UI elements or documents can override agent instructions, leading to unintended actions like data exfiltration or malware installation. And you might be wondering what being an experienced user means, but Microsoft didn't even detail this themselves. The company didn't describe what type of training or experience such users should have or what actions they should take to prevent their devices from being compromised. I asked Microsoft to provide those details and the company declined. My read on it is that this is just a way of having a light disclosure that you should proceed at your own risk, and there really isn't any specific person who can actually keep themselves safe from this yet because we haven't built the safeguards. That is my translation for you that probably isn't far off from the reality. And something that researchers are really pointing to that I appreciate as well, there's something called macros, which can automate things on your computer. And Microsoft has said, don't enable macros. They're dangerous. This has never worked well. They say this is macros on Marvel superhero crack, which is from a researcher named Kevin Beaumont, who I think that's a hilarious way to put it and is quite true. And what's so frustrating to me personally about this is that these big tech companies are just kind of clueless about all of it. So Dell put out this report here that says Windows 11 transition is far slower than Windows 10 shift as PC solves stale. Do you remember how many people didn't want to move to Windows 10 when it when it came out. It feels like every time there's a major Windows release, there's this huge hesitation from the world. A lot of it is probably just stubbornness, but some of it is legitimate. Well, Windows 11 is even slower, and this seems to be the slowest transition in a long time. Part of the reason is because Windows 11 has unfair hardware requirements that pretty much ends the life of a lot of perfectly good hardware, trapping people on Windows 10 and forcing them to either pay for security updates, go through some weird workarounds that now exist after Outrage, or find a new device to purchase for Windows 11. And faced with those options, people may just not upgrade and stick on insecure operating systems. And before I continue, I want to mention Dell can survive flat PC growth because its enterprise AI hardware portfolio is booming. That is a direct quote from the article. So these companies are relying on AI tools to keep themselves up while pushing those AI tools on users that are putting them in a situation in the first place. And this whole situation is just a mess. But as I was saying, an alternative that people have been figuring out, especially the last several months, is the move to Linux. What happens if I just ditch Windows altogether? And we're seeing Xorin OS, who has celebrated 1 million downloads of Xorin OS 18, because a ton of these downloads came from a recent surge in people interested in getting Linux. Now, this is just downloads. That doesn't translate to necessarily monthly active users. I want to be very clear about this. But I still think getting 1 million downloads on a Linux distro for just one distro is kind of insane. And to just kind of close out Microsoft before I touch on Google, a Microsoft executive has asked, and this is a real article for people who can't see the video, why aren't more people impressed with AI? This is from Mustafa Suleiman, who's Microsoft's head of AI, and he's venting about the company who's receiving backlash for saying Windows is evolving into an agentic OS. He said on Twitter, and I quote, "Geez, there are so many cynics. That there should be an R after there. It cracks me up when I hear people call AI underwhelming." I just want to address this tweet real quick. I don't even think the people criticizing Microsoft is saying that AI as a whole is underwhelming. I'm sure a lot of people would say that too, but that's actually not what they're saying. They're saying that your AI is underwhelming. They're saying they don't want to use it. They're saying it's not useful to them. So this is actually feedback for your product. And if this was me, I would be taking this as feedback personally. But this is Microsoft. Now, there is one person in the world who owns an AI company who actually agrees with Microsoft on this, and it's Elon Musk. So Elon Musk responded to this take and just said, good point. He has his own AI startup. The article here from PC Mag definitely shares why Elon might be a little bit more bullish on AI. But the reason why I wanted to share this story is that it speaks to how these companies are putting this nebulous technology called AI into everything possible, oftentimes when you're not even asking for it. I have been embracing AI in my life a lot more the last year. I was very critically anti-AI in every context, and now I'm finding what's a little bit of a middle ground for myself since then, and I'm doing it in a way that's local first, that's privacy friendly, and then when I do have to use paid models, I try to actually pay for them, which tends to come with slightly better privacy policies, and you can actually pay for them using things like DuckAI, which proxies them privately for you. So there are ways to get value from AI and not deal with as many of the issues with the technology, which is the most we can do in the world. Every technology has an inherent drawback, and our job is to see what those drawbacks are and find our best way to develop a relationship with the technology where it gives us the most value with the least amount of drawbacks. Microsoft isn't actually making this an option for everybody, and this is a serious problem, as well as many other big tech companies. For them, this is about profits, and it's taking away your user choice, and people are finally fed up with it and moving away to things like Linux or just not even upgrading their computers. I hope these companies listen. Now, Google is going through the same exact thing. So there was this whole saga. It started off with Mauerbytes that put out a blog article that talked about how Gmail can read your emails and attachments to power smart features. And the pretty much assessment and what they said at first was that Google was just enabling by default their AI features to just scan all of your emails and use it to train their AI models. This has been corrected, and Google did come forward and said, this isn't actually what we meant with our wording. So what's actually going on is Gmail is scanning email content to power its own smart features like spam filtering, categorization, and writing suggestions. But this is part of how Gmail normally works and isn't the same as training Google's generative AI models. Google also maintains that these feature settings are opt-in rather than opt-out, although users' experiences seem to vary depending on when and how the new wording appeared. I feel like Mauerbytes can say partial correction to the original headline. Did anyone ask for this? No, is this actually helping people? Not anywhere near directly. So your emails in Gmail are being used to train unless you actively go in and opt out. How do you opt out, you might ask? Well, log into Gmail. Step one, turn off smart features in Gmail, chat, and meet settings. And if you're in the video, you can just see this on screen. I'm kind of showing it to you here. And of course, if you're in video or audio, please take a look at the sources down in the description. Find a Mauerbytes article, and it will show you exactly how to disable this. Or, of course, you can just choose not to use Gmail and find better alternatives. And, of course, we have no shortage of people who are capitalizing on this, like Tuda put out a good blog post talking about how to disable this and how to opt out. And, of course, it's a good plug for services like Tuda and for Proton as well. And if you think this is just a Gmail problem, Google is now starting to test ads in their AI mode. It's important to be clear here because you might hear AI mode and you might think Gemini, but Google is a bit confusing here. So AI mode is when you do a Google search. Let's say you want to search like what's the average air quality in LA. This is something you can type in, and then it's going to say, you know, whatever, some AI generated summary, and it says dive deeper in AI mode. That is the AI mode that's being referred to here for these ads that are being run. So when you go there, now you're going to start seeing ads above the prompt that you put in. I don't believe this is applying to Gemini anytime soon, but the fact that they are starting to run ads inside of an AI chat that's run by Google is a little bit interesting. And yes, it is still technically Gemini powered, but it is not using Gemini directly. Google is kind of playing these word games. They're saying, well, technically, the AI training is used for this, but not for this. Oh, some people are actually opted out, but not everybody. It's unclear who. And the AI mode, well, yeah, it's for the AI mode, not for Gemini. So I think it's very important to see the patterns that these big tech companies are implementing in their language around AI and how this AI stuff is no longer about bringing you value. I feel like we're kind of hitting the point of LLM maximization, where we're starting to find the peaks of how much value LLMs can provide people. There might be other ways to make AI more powerful, but right now it seems like LLMs are kind of hitting a spot where they're bringing as much value as they can. So now, in part of the enshittification process, we need to figure out how to monetize that and make more money off of it. So I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of this stuff as time goes on. Now, I don't want to be fully negative about AI either. I did see some interesting things that people are trying that don't seem to be inherently bad and seem to be at least trying to offer an alternative to what we're seeing from these other companies. And the first one is from Brave. So Brave put out this blog article called Verifiable Privacy and Transparency, which is a new frontier for Brave's AI privacy. And this is just a quick technical piece about how they're developing new technology to help guarantee that they can't read your messages and that this is all run with end-to-end verification and that Leo, I still don't know how to pronounce it in Brave, has a lot of these privacy assurances. And these are the kind of technologies that I would love to see more in all AI models and all LLMs out there. Similarly, Mozilla's come forward and they are doubling down. You know, there was some backlash last week about how they are rolling out some more AI features and agentic browsing in Firefox, and they're trying to do it in a far more protected way for users. And people kind of got upset about it. And they're like, hey, we're doing for AI what we did for the web. So they're doubling down. They're sharing their mission. They're sharing what they want to build. And they have a whole article about why they're trying to do this if you want to read more. And on this note, they've released a Tabs API, which is their latest bet on the agentic web. And so you can actually sign up yourself to get early access to the Tabs API if you are a developer and you want to build stuff in this. I frankly don't understand how you develop for AI browsing. That is something that I have no clue about. But if you are somebody who's interested in experimenting with this, developers can get 1,000 requests monthly on the free tier. And the Tabs API website suggests it'll cost $5 per 1,000 requests. So if you are interested in this, that is something else you can do. If you are a believer in agentic web browsing, this seems to be at least somewhat of the healthier approach to try to do this stuff away from big tech companies. So yeah, this is your final reminder that these big tech companies are acting in a lot of ways that aren't in your best interest. And the sooner that we kind of wake up to that collectively, the sooner we can take action and actually hold these companies a little bit more accountable. The thing is, these companies are seeing the impacts. They're getting backlash socially. They are seeing lower numbers. They're seeing people not upgrade their devices. They're seeing the actual impacts of their lack of consideration for helping people. But I think we just need to keep pushing a little bit further. This is something that isn't won overnight, and I think all of you listening can be a big part of this fight by just voicing your concerns with this stuff, not engaging with these features. If you have to use Windows, turn off the stuff. It still signals to all of this bunch of Microsoft telemetry they use to track what you do that you're not using the features. Ideally, you can just move off of Windows altogether. Eventually, they have to go, okay, people don't want this crap. You know, the metaverse was released as this thing by Mark Zuckerberg, this idea that he had that no one wants to socialize IRL anymore. And frankly, it was a flop. Very few people bought it. Very few people wanted it. And because of that, we don't really hear about the metaverse anymore. There's still some lingering aspects of that project, but the world's moved on. And we can do the same thing with a lot of these AI features that we don't like. And that is, I think, the future for AI. That is user respecting. Up next, I have a official government warning from CISA about spyware that's spying on your applications, as well as an Android malware, Sternus, that steals your Signal, WhatsApp, and messages from things like Telegram. But before I get to that, I have a couple notes here and some announcements from last week's first surveillance report back on the Techlore side of things and inside the Techlore umbrella. So thank you all for your wonderful feedback from last week. It seems like overall the new format was really well received, and I'm happy that it resonated with so many of you. So thank you so much for believing in the podcast and still being here and giving it a fair shot. Now, there were a few things I did see a bit consistently in terms of feedback, so I wanted to address those. The biggest one is, oh, I miss having a co-host. And yeah, it's kind of the same for me. I don't like talking for 45 minutes to an hour at a time just by myself. And so we're all going to miss Nate, and Nate's going to be a very hard person to replace. And yes, having a co-host is still something on the table going forward, but my main priority right now is just continuing this podcast, keeping it consistent, making the improvements you all want to see, and just making sure things stay the way you like them. So I'd rather really wait to find the right person, and I want to handle things as patiently as possible. The second thing I saw is no more Q&As for patrons. For context, without Nate, it's just a Q&A with me, and I think it's important for all of you to see surveillance support under the Techlore umbrella. So I am planning to roll out Q&As for patrons a little bit more consistently in a semi-new format. So I think that'll do a good job of replacing the Q&A for you old SR patrons on the Techlore side of things. So I hope you all enjoy that. And I'll put out some more announcements for that shortly. A lot of you said the transition music was scary and loud, so I did tone it down a little bit and brightened it up a little bit. So if that helps, let me know. But yeah, it's the surveillance report. So yeah, you know, like, come on, like, it's a little spooky. I just don't want to scare you all in the process. So let me know if it's a little bit better. And the last complaint I saw is it's harder to get only SR content. Some of you only like surveillance support. You don't want to watch the other content on Techlore. I totally get it. We have some changes going on behind the scenes right now that's going to move some things over to different places. That's going to make this extremely easy for you. If you're listening to audio, it's still the same RSS feed, and you can just follow surveillance port via the RSS feed. So that's an easy workaround. But there should be a solution coming out in the next week or two that's going to centralize everything for Techlore in a really clean way so you all can follow exactly what you want. So thank you all for the feedback. And now back to the episode. So I already talked about this new malware that's happening on the Techlore side of things. And to break this down, there's this new Android banking Trojan named Sternus. And this can capture communications from end-to-end encrypted messaging platforms like Signal, WhatsApp, and Telegram, as well as take complete control over your device. Now, I think it's actually important that people are leaning in first with Signal, WhatsApp, and Telegram, because this is a very scary utilization of this attack, but actually it's a little bit more accurate to look at it in a reversed way. This attack takes control of your device, therefore it gets access to things like Signal, WhatsApp, and Telegram. The main thing that a lot of people are concerned about is that this impacts the end-to-end encryption of some of these platforms. And I say end-to-end encryption generously, as one of those platforms, Telegram, doesn't have default end-to-end encryption, nor does it include end-to-end encryption in anything like group chats and other desktop clients. What this malware does is that if you install this piece of malware, it uses the accessibility permission on your device. And once it has that permission, it can pretty much do anything on your device that you want it to. It's almost no different from just handing your unlocked device to a stranger on the street, them opening the Signal app and reading through all your messages. It can use fake overlays. There's screenshots for those people who are watching on video, or again, always check the sources if you're in audio. And this is all to hide malicious actions running in the background. It's essentially, again, taking remote control of your device. Now, from what I can tell, Sternus was actually developed originally to be a banking malware app, so it steals your funds from banking apps, but clearly it's been pivoted to also target messengers now. In terms of things that you can do to keep yourself safe from this specific attack, you actually have to do a lot of things wrong for to be infected with this, so please listen up and also share this advice with people you know. First thing is keep your devices up to date. Second thing is be careful where you install software. If you don't know what you're doing, stick to official app stores and only install apps you need from those app stores. And if you are getting apps away from the app store, make sure to get it from trusted places like F-Droid and don't get it from sketchy websites or sketchy app stores. Third thing, I recommend using lockdown mode on iOS and also using Google's Advanced Protection Program on Android if you have access to either of those options. And four, this is a bit of risk mitigation, but I like to use disappearing messages in my messengers when I can so that if there is any kind of infection on my device, it only goes back a certain amount of time. So I set all my signal messages to be 4 weeks by default, and that's an easy way to at least have some risk mitigation. And fifth, I should have mentioned this earlier, don't grant the accessibility service permission easily. You should really treat this like it's access to your phone. So if any app asks for the accessibility permission, you should really stop what you're doing, check to make sure it's a legitimate app, make sure it has a good reason to request it. There are legitimate reasons to request this. I know some password managers, I believe, use the accessibility permission to do things like autofill. So there are legitimate reasons for this, but not every app has a legitimate reason for this permission. And many apps who ask for it, you can just not give it to them and the app will still work as if nothing went wrong. And in semi-related news, this actually came out a couple days ago from CISA.gov. So this is America's cyber defense agency, and they put out a formal warning that they are aware of multiple cyber threat actors actively leveraging commercial spyware to target users of mobile messaging applications. They're using sophisticated targeting and social engineering techniques to deliver spyware and gain unauthorized access to a victim's messaging app. The tactics include phishing and malicious device linking QR codes to compromise victim accounts and link them to an actor-controlled device, zero-click exploits, and impersonation of messaging app platforms like Signal and WhatsApp. So to kind of expand on the tips I already shared with you guys, make sure you're getting the legitimate Signal, the legitimate WhatsApp, etc. Don't just get it from a random website. Don't just trust a random person who sends you the installation link. Make sure you're on the correct website. Get it from the correct link. And that is the best way to avoid impersonations. In terms of zero-click exploits, again, I recommend using lockdown mode or advanced data protection as some basic starting points and making sure that your device is kept up to date. And when it comes to the phishing and malicious device linking QR code thing, this is a tricky one to protect against, but I do just overall recommend maybe once a week checking your linked devices on something like Signal to make sure there isn't anything there you don't recognize. There have been some mitigations that Signal's taken to make this a bit harder, but you should still probably check this about once a week if you're concerned about keeping your messages safe. Now, before getting into the EU, I wanted to go ahead and share that this podcast is also community supported. While Easy Opt-Outs is a sponsor every other week, we had to turn down a lot of sponsors back when I was with Nate, dozens, if not hundreds over the years that wanted to sponsor our podcast, and almost all of them we said no to. And that's because we had countless supporters on Patreon who made the podcast possible for years. And the same thing applies here on Techlore. The way we're able to have strict sponsors is because we have other revenue models. And one of the main revenue models is all of you in the community. And we really couldn't do it without all of you out there. So if you do like this podcast or you like other work that's happening at Techlore, you can become a Techlorean, and you can do that by going below and joining our Patreon. If you're on YouTube, you can become a member. We do support Monero if you just want to send us some tips, and all of these different things really help contribute. Even if it's $5 one time, that actually makes a massive difference, especially at the scale that we're working with and the number of people who would be giving back. I want to give a massive shout out to everybody who supported us over the years, and especially our current supporters. You're all awesome, and you're making this kind of work possible, which is my dream to be here. And I'm just happy to see how much impact it's having on so many people around the world right now. And it just wouldn't be possible without all of you. So thank you all so much. And if you want to join them, you can check it out down in the description. And now let's get into the EU. So in this week's episode of What the Hell is Happening with Chat Control, which for those of you who are new to this podcast, Chat Control is the EU's attempt to backdoor end-to-end encryption in the interest of, air quotes, keeping children safe by backdooring all their messages and ensuring that they can't get access to safe technologies that can be trusted. I know it doesn't sound like a good idea, but the EU's really been pushing this for a few years now, and they really want it to pass. And if you missed last week's episode, I kind of touched on the back and forth that's been happening. One day they say chat control's back, the next day they say it's gone. I've been doing a lot of coverage for this on the Techlore channel, and we have a little bit more kind of back and forth. So Patrick Breyer, came forward, and he's one of the main people who's been speaking out about this a lot. He's heavily involved with the Fight Chat Control.eu initiative. And his new blog article, Reality Check, EU Council Chat Control Vote is not a retreat, but a green light for indiscriminate mass surveillance and the end of right to communicate anonymously. I just want to express that this is still hard to follow, as if you go to fightchatcontrol.eu, it says they've been forced to revise the text, etc., and that there are still some things that they're looking at, but it seems like it's still a win. What Patrick's points are here, if all of you are trying to follow what's going on, is that they've removed the obligation for scanning, aka a mandated backdoor. But Patrick is saying the headlines are misleading. Chat control is not dead. It is just being privatized. Now, I'm going to touch more on what Patrick is trying to say, but I want to be kind of clear here. As someone who's been trying to do coverage of chat control, it's actually extremely hard to follow. So one day we have people like Patrick even celebrating chat control is gone and as a win, and the next day it's back, etc. And everyone seems to disagree on what's going on. And so I can't really blame anyone out there for putting out a headline saying chat control is dead. So that's just a bit of my personal experience to share with all of you. So what Patrick is calling this is the council endorsed today is a Trojan horse. By cementing voluntary mass scanning, they are legitimizing the warrantless, error-prone mass surveillance of millions of Europeans by U.S. corporations, while simultaneously killing online anonymity through the backdoor of age verification. And he puts together three hidden dangers of this, air quotes, voluntary deal. The first one is that voluntary means indiscriminate mass scanning. This would allow the scanning of private text messages, unknown images, and metadata using unreliable algorithms. And we're talking about tens of thousands of completely legal private chats being leaked to police annually due to faulty algorithms and AI. This is no more reliable than guessing. Calling this voluntary does not make the violation of the digital secrecy of correspondence any less severe. The second thing he talks about is the death of anonymous communications, age checks for everyone. He says to comply with the council's requirements to reliably identify minors, providers will be forced to verify the age of every single user. The reality, this means every citizen will effectively have to upload an ID or undergo a face scan to open an email or messenger account. The consequence is this creates a de facto ban on anonymous communication, a vital lifeline for whistleblowers, journalists, political activists, and abuse victims seeking help. The third thing is what he calls digital house arrest for teenagers. And under the guise of protection, the council text proposes barring users under 17 from using apps with chat functions, including WhatsApp, Instagram, and popular online games, unless conditions are met. And Patrick's final comments are that we must stop pretending that voluntary mass surveillance is acceptable in a democracy. We are facing a future where you need an ID card to send a message and where foreign black box AI decides if your private photos are suspicious. This is not a victory for privacy. It is a disaster waiting to happen. Mulvad did coverage for this, and also fightchatcontrol.eu is still up. And this is where the confusion kind of arises for me, right? Like, it's called fightchatcontrol.eu. If someone goes on fightchatcontrol.eu right now, it looks like mandatory scanning excluded, and it seems like it's overall presented as a win as far as the way I'm reading it and how a lot of people are reading it. Definitely check out the sources if you're an audio listener. And so it's really hard to piece together what's exactly going on, but this is the newest update, and that was put out literally today at the time of recording this. And so this is the most up-to-date news on chat control, so make sure to subscribe to this podcast so that you can catch this next week as well, and we can figure out what's still going on with chat control then. Now, in positive news out of the EU, a lot of this regulation has actually amounted to something really cool, which is that the EU has forced Apple to adopt new Wi-Fi standards, and now Android can support AirDrop. If you haven't seen this yet, it is sick. Now, it is only for the Pixel 10, but other phones should follow soon. And yes, there is even an MKBHD short that I just watched before recording, like 10 minutes before recording this episode, with MKBHD doing an AirDrop from a Pixel 10 to a macOS device. So this is super awesome, and it's finally tearing down some of these fake artificial walls that have been put up by these big tech companies over the years. So I'm extremely happy to see this, and I hope that more things continue in this direction. And now, my friends, I'm going to go into the data breaches and updates section. And actually, today we have kind of three mini sections because there were a lot of a more of a rare kind of story, which is kind of just general exploits that weren't necessarily used on a mass scale that I wanted to inform you all about. Then, of course, the typical data breaches, and then the updates to the services many of you probably use. So I'm just going to go through these headlines. Again, if you didn't catch last week's episode, I'm just going to go through these very quickly, share the headlines and some basic information. I did see some good feedback to also include any numbers when those are relevant, and that will definitely be relevant when I talk about the data breaches themselves. So the first thing is D-Link has warned of a new RCE flaw in end-of-life DIR 878 routers. So if you have any D-Link routers, definitely check out the sources. Some ASUS routers are being hacked by China state actors, and an Ars Technica article that is in the sources can actually tell you how you know if you've been impacted by it. In semi-related news, ASUS has released new firmware to patch 9 security vulnerabilities, and so that is something else that you all should look into. There's a new SonicWall SonicOS flaw that allowed hackers to crash firewalls, so look into that if you use that service. This one is pretty interesting. Malicious Blender model files were delivering a info-stealing malware. So if you're getting any Blender files from marketplaces like CG Trader, this is something you should definitely look into, so check that out down in the description. Now to the data breaches. Google has said hackers stole data from 200 companies following the Gainsight data breach. This is quite enterprise focused, so this is relevant to any of you listening who run a large company that's running on Salesforce, which, I don't know, maybe one of you out there, this is for you. A hacker has claimed to steal 2.3 terabytes of data from Italian rail group Almaviva. I didn't see any specific numbers cited, but we do have that 2.3 terabyte figure. Iberia has disclosed a customer data leak after vendor security breach. This is a Spanish airline, and they have already started notifying people, and it impacted 76 gigabytes of data. Harvard University has disclosed a data breach affecting alumni and donors. They seem to imply that this is everyone. They don't say it's not everyone, so it's a bit confusing. And if it is everybody, there is 400,000 alumni worldwide, and 24,000 undergrad and graduate students, and 20,000 faculty and staff. So that's one to look into if you're in any way associated with Harvard. And this is an update to a data breach that we most certainly covered on Surveillance Report already, which is that Comcast is paying $1.5 million fine for a vendor breach affecting 270,000 customers. So definitely check that out. And now we get into the updates for the services you all use. And this one I'm really excited about. I've already been using it in our private Signal group, and it is Signal Polls. And it's been very fun. And yes, it is exactly what you think it is. You can now do polls on Signal, which is probably going to be used in groups. You just click the plus icon, and it's very well done. And yes, we did discover that it was 10 options max. Oh, I see it says in the article as well. We did it through trialing it ourselves. So if you use Signal, I'm very excited about that. The next update comes from Krebs / from Mozilla themselves, that they are actually dropping OneRep from their people searching website removal service. The reason for this, if any of you weren't around during this like melodrama, pretty much, Mozilla released their own Mozilla Monitor. It's supposed to be this thing that scans the internet, removes your data. We see it from services like Optory, and it's a well-established kind of business model out there. The problem is that founder had created dozens of people searching services himself. So he was double dipping by creating people searching services and selling removal services to people, which is actually crazy. So Mozilla said they are officially winding this down, and we will no longer be using OneRep, according to Mozilla. And I think this is fantastic. Now, they haven't actually found an alternative yet, so this is something that they're still going to be pursuing. This one's a bit more technical, but it's called Counter Galois Onion. Man, I probably said some crazy stuff there. Galois Onion. It's pretty much improved encryption for Tor circuit traffic. So this is a very heavy cryptography post. So if you're interested in encryption and cryptography and any of that good stuff in the Tor project, definitely check it out. Seems like it's a cool post. I can't really tell you much about it. Proton Pass, the open source password manager, has released Proton Pass CLI. So if whatever reason, I am not here to judge. I just don't have a reason to share with the community for why they would do this. If you want your password manager only in a command line interface, you can now do that with Proton Pass. So there you go. They do include some benefits, which include speed and productivity with automation and scripting, secure and simple shared credential management, secure secret injection, and reduce the complexity of automation. This one I did not expect to find in my RSS reader, but I wanted to share it nonetheless, which is that Pebble, the watch company, is going fully open source with shipping date already set. This means that users can now build, run, and maintain every piece of software needed to operate a Pebble watch. This includes firmware for the watch and the mobile apps for Android and iOS, and it puts the entire software stack into public hands, and I've never, ever been so interested in a smartwatch before in my life. And yes, it has repairability built in, and deliveries are expected in early 2026. So color me actually really excited for a smartwatch, because this looks freaking awesome. And finally, Thunderbird Pro put out an update. This is the additional subscription service to Thunderbird, the email client. And they included new things like an appointment feature, an easy to use scheduling tool, Send, which offers end-to-end encrypted file sharing, and Thunder Mail. So they have some of these new features. If you are a Thunder Mail user and you're interested in the Pro features, go check that out down in the sources. Again, just to recap things, we talked about AI disasters and how these big tech companies are using AI to try to convince you you need something when they're really actually feeding you a lot of bad stuff. We talked about how malware is stealing end-to-end encryption for people all over the world and what you can do about it. We talked about chat control and other EU regulations and a lot of data breaches and updates. And I hope that you all found it useful. And again, if you enjoy this podcast and you get value from it, there are all the countless ways you can support Techlore to keep this going down in the description. We really couldn't do it without our supporters. So thank you all so much for your support. And I'm just so happy to be here and to be doing this each week. And I want to wish you all a very happy Thanksgiving if you're in the US. And if you're outside the US, well, happy Wednesday/Thursday. And I also want to mention that I made a Black Friday video. So if you're an audio listener and you want to check out some Black Friday deals that are happening this week, that is something down there. But again, only get something if you're already looking to buy it. Don't use it as an excuse to just buy something you don't need. And that, my friends, is all I have to share with you. Thank you all for tuning in, for taking your digital rights a little bit more seriously each week, for keeping yourself safe, and also directly and indirectly keeping the people around you safe as well. If there's any story in here that resonated with you that you think impacts somebody else, share it with them. And also make sure to leave a rating for this podcast if you are on a platform that allows that, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, etc. That's really important for discovery, and your ratings really mean a lot to see, and I do read them all. So thank you all very much. And I'll see you next time on Techlore for the Surveillance Report.